Hello and welcome to the Mejlis Podcast, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's current affairs talk show focusing on Central Asia. I'm Bruce Pannier, host of the Mejlis and author of the Central Asia in Focus newsletter. Kazakhstan is having a national referendum on construction of a nuclear power plant on October 6th. Around the world, many countries have plans or building nuclear power plants to meet energy needs of households and businesses. Kazakhstan, however, has a unique situation. Between 1949 and 1989, when Kazakhstan was part of the Soviet Union, 456 nuclear bombs were tested in northeastern Kazakhstan, and the effects of those continue to harm the people and environment of that region to this day. To discuss the pros and cons and controversy of the proposed nuclear power plant in Kazakhstan, I am joined by Tokjan Kasenova, an expert on nuclear politics and financial crime prevention, and author of the widely acclaimed book, Atomic Step, How Kazakhstan Gave Up the Bomb. Aya Ranaut, an editor in RIPRL's Kazakh service, known locally as Azatik, and soon to be senior editor at RIPRL's new Central Asia unit. Darhan Umurbekov, digital editor at Azatik, who is based in Astana and has been following events surrounding the nuclear power plant inside the country. So thank you all for joining me. You know, Darhan, I'm actually going to start with you. When you walk around the street, when you turn on TV, when you look at the newspapers, what does it say? Is it real obvious? Is this a big thing? Is it everywhere for people to see? The referendum is coming up.
If you go to streets, yeah, it's the campaign is not as strong as it is during the parliamentary or presidential elections, but the media is reporting immensely on the referendum and the possible construction of the nuclear power plants. So state-owned and state-controlled media also report the positive aspects of the plant, largely ignoring the risks and arguments raised by opponents. Meanwhile, independent journalists and experts are focusing mainly on the risks associated with operating nuclear power plants. And recently, a prominent local media outlet published a controversial article that was widely perceived as propaganda. The initial title of the article was something along the lines, who are these opponents of the nuclear power plant in Kazakhstan? And following public backlash, the title was slightly changed to who are the opponents and supporters of the plant, but didn't change the main idea of the article. The article included a compilation of facts about Aset Naurzubayev, a prominent expert who is opposing the project. Mr. Naurzubayev, a former head of Kazakhstan's electricity grid operating company, was linked in the article to Mukhtar Ablyazov, a former banker turned opposition figure in exile. The authors intended to link Naurzubayev to Ablyazov and hint that his opposition to the plant might have a political motivation. Mukhtar Ablyazov is a former banker who is turned to opposition figure in exile. The Kazakh government convicted him in absentia and declared his organizations affiliated with him extremist. And regarding the attitude to the referendum and to the idea of constructing a nuclear power plant in Kazakhstan, it's difficult to say for all the population, and the government strictly tightly regulates which institutions and organizations are permitted to conduct surveys regarding elections and referendums. Earlier this month, an institution affiliated with the ruling party, Amanat, published the results of its survey on the referendum. According to findings, 59% of the people support the idea of constructing the plant. And independent sociologist Serk Bisimbaev notes that these kind of organizations are typically reluctant to share their data set and survey methodologies, raising doubt about their reliability of their results. Other than that, I can add that the people who we interviewed, who we talked to, are mainly opposed the construction of the nuclear power plants in Kazakhstan.
Let me just follow up real quick. When you're walking around the streets or on, I don't know if you take public transportation or anything, is this actually a topic that people are discussing when they're just outside in the public, you know, or they just talk about other things and no one's paying that much attention to the fact that there is about to be a referendum?
I haven't noticed strong conversations about the referendum in the streets, but the people we know, you know, Astana is a small city, and the people we interact with, they are either, you know, affiliated with the government or with media. And if you talk to journalists or the other people who work in public service, they may... when they learn that I work for Azatik, they ask many questions about referendum, but I doubt that that's the main topic for them to discuss in their daily life.
Okay, thank you. Aya, you know, we heard that the authorities are trying to mute criticism of the plant. I mean, they've actually detained activists for this, right? That tried to come out against construction.
Right. So the way things unfolded in the past year is that President Tokayev in 2023, during his yearly annual address to the nation, said that okay, the country needs a nuclear power plant. We need to vote on that because it's a divisive issue, and that gave start to all sorts of they call them public debates. That were held in all major cities and in the regional centers. And Azatik had a chance to visit several of them, and they all unfolded according to a like similar scenario and hence attracted a lot of criticism. And yeah, speaking about people being detained, that started happening the closer basically the debates were coming towards Almaty and Astana, the two major cities, the more we heard of such cases when people were whether prevented from taking part in the debates or were detained during the debates. They were accused of disturbing public order and etc. One person was fined. So there were several cases everywhere. And a part of that, there were complaints from people that they learned about the debates late, so they were not widely advertised. They were difficult to access. It was difficult to have access to a microphone. Once you made it to the debate, you couldn't actually get access to the mic. So all that, again, brings us to the question of how genuine was the intent to have an open debate about pros and cons of a nuclear power plant, how genuine was the intent to share information so people can take informed decisions. And I would say that the same trend continues. And this, like, very clearly a pro-government project that is now being supported by the government machine. So the deputies are now out there that formed like an organization that's called People Headquarters for the Construction of Power Plant, and they're touring the region again, meeting various groups of people, promoting the plant. And again, everything looks quite staged, and the information they provide is quite superficial to my mind. So yes, again, the opponents of a nuclear power plant have a much smaller platform. Their chances or their opportunities to express their opinions are extremely limited, and I find they continue to shrink. So yeah, it is and not a very like equal debate, I would say.
Let me just follow up for clarity here. Where did they have the public debates? Were they in all the wilayats, the provinces of Kazakhstan?
Yes, they held the debates in 17, in all 17 regions and the three main cities, which are Almaty, Shymkent, and the capital Astana. Officially, they were held by an organization that is called Civil Alliance Kazakhstan's Civil Alliance, Гражданский Альянс Казахстана, which is a public organization, but it is affiliated, well, known to be affiliated with the government. And so there were invited speakers, representatives of the Kazakhstan nuclear power plants company, which is in charge of the project, people from the National Institute of Physics, people from the Ministry of Energy, and those speakers mostly expressed expressed a lot of enthusiasm about the nuclear power plant, explaining its benefits. So yeah, those debates were held in this manner where speakers were mostly talking about benefits that nuclear power plant will bring to the country. And the voices of criticism were mostly coming from people who came to participate in the debates from the public.
Thank you very much. Tokjan, you have visited the most affected region. I had mentioned that there was all these nuclear bomb tests in northeastern Kazakhstan for over the course of 40 years. You visited that region a lot. You were just there, not just a few weeks ago. When you were speaking with people, what did they think about this nuclear power plant?
So for me, it's very interesting to observe, you know, I just wanted to add on the polls, because the polls, both from government-affiliated institutions such as Kazakhstan Institute for Strategic Studies and a poll from last year, which was done by Demoscope with Paperlab. So, you know, especially the second one, I think I cannot doubt the results, and the results show that majority do support the idea of a nuclear power plant. But those results do not, for me, do not coincide at all with all the with everything I observed in Kazakhstan, and I spent more than a month there, both in Simei but also in Almaty. I haven't met a single person who, you know, who was very supportive of the idea of the construction. So, yeah, both in Simei region, but also in places like Almaty, anywhere I went, and all the discussions, even if they were not specific to the current nuclear debate, for example, you know, when I would talk about Kazakhstan's nuclear history, there was always this very emotional response and extremely negative. And I think for many people in Kazakhstan, the trauma of the Soviet nuclear tests is very powerful, and it's very deep in the popular psyche. And I think that in the way that the government is, you know, doing its messaging right now, it should be much more nuanced and more respectful of that side. But I don't see it happening as the colleagues were describing. I found public hearings, you know, to be very heavy-handed. And I don't think this is how you can win public trust. So, yeah, and for people, you know, and right even now I receive messages from families that are, you know, affected by nuclear tests. And these are parents with small children who have severe physical disabilities, and they would write and ask me, you know, how is it possible that the government is considering this, and we are so afraid, and, you know, we have been pushed to go to the referendum and so on. So, yeah, I think that sentiment is extremely strong within the society.
You were in Semei when you were there on this last trip. Any particular comments that you remember that someone made about the plant?
I don't remember specific comments, but, you know, it's clear to me that people in Kazakhstan, especially those who are either from the region or, you know, have a more attentive, maybe pay more attention to the past. For them, it's a direct connection between the Soviet nuclear weapons program and anything that is nuclear. So for me as a nuclear policy person, of course, you know, so the way I see it, that there are legitimate concerns and fears that have grown out of very real experience connected with the nuclear tests. But of course, you know, for me as a nuclear policy person, sometimes I wish there was more nuance in the discourse in terms of not equating nuclear technology for military purposes with nuclear technology for peaceful purposes, right? Because we know that nuclear technology can be so useful, I don't know, in the medical field, in agriculture, and including for production of nuclear power. So I just want to reiterate my position that I'm not opposed to nuclear power as a source of energy. I'm not the one to say whether Kazakhstan truly needs it or it doesn't. But, you know, what I'm definitely worried about is how it's kind of been shoved down people's throat, you know, and while at the same time, I wish the overall debate would be more nuanced and that there would be more distinction about, you know, the different aspects of nuclear when we discuss in this topic.
Okay, thank you, because this is a good point. And let's talk about this for a minute, too. Now, there's lots of ways to generate energy, right? And, you know, strangely, although Kazakhstan is a major oil exporter and the world's leading uranium exporter, most of the electricity in Kazakhstan is produced by coal-fired thermal power plants at the moment. Now, everyone sees that this is a bad deal. You get pollution in all the major cities in Kazakhstan now, including Astana, which is actually out on the steppe. So clearly, there needs to be a different kind of solution. There's also wind, there's solar, and Kazakhstan is investing in these projects too. But their nuclear power plant is going to generate something more than 2,000 megawatts of electricity. We've seen examples of 1,000 megawatt wind farms in places in Central Asia. Has there been, Darhan, we'll start with you, has there been any comparison or in the media? Do you see anyone even attempting to say, yes, we can, we need the power? We understand that we don't want to have coal-fired power plants, but discussing options to nuclear, other green or alternative energy sources?
Well, I would like to consider the opponents and supporters of the project across the spectrum, and I would stop to those who are asking about the alternatives. So the first group is, as Tolzhan said, they adamantly oppose any idea of building nuclear power plants in Kazakhstan because of Soviet time trauma. And then second group of people are not convinced that the electricity deficiency is serious enough to justify nuclear energy. And coming to your question, some argue that Kazakhstan is rich in natural gas and it would be far cheaper to use gas electricity production. Among them is Mukhtar Jakishev, the former head of the state company Kazatomprom, who was imprisoned on corruption charges in 2010 and served 10 years before being released in 2020. He said that currently we are burning, the Kazakhstan, the oil producers are burning so much gas that can be used to produce electricity. And there are people who also support the idea. And also, we hear voices for solar energy and wind energy and other alternative ways that can compensate the electricity deficiency. And I also noticed concerns over dealing with nuclear waste. The people who express these views talk about challenges and risks of storage and recycling of nuclear waste. And additionally, there are ecologists who are raising environmental risks. First, the plan is to get water from the plant needs water from Lake Balkhash, and after using it releases that water back to the lake. And experts, and specifically, we read it from Aya's article, say that the water release back to lake will increase the water temperature. That might damage the environmental system of the lake. And Balkhash Lake is shrinking, and in the future, the plant will face difficulties with water. And then there are those who say, okay, we acknowledge that nuclear power plant might be necessary to address the power shortages, but we do not trust the government, which is riddled with corruption. So the best example of this argument is LRT project that we have been building it for more than 10 years, and it was riddled with corruption scandals, and their concerns seem reasonable. And finally, there is a group opposing the project due to concerns over Russia's involvement in the project. They say that they might support the idea, but if Rosatom, a Russia state company, is involved, they are absolutely against the power plant. So they said that it might be reasonable to add second question in the referendum. So if the plant is built, which country's company should be involved in the construction? So that's a spectrum I have noticed so far. And the interesting thing is that the authorities try to answer to all the arguments from the opponents except for one question: the Russians involved in the project. The state-affiliated experts and the official figures are reluctant to talk about the geopolitical risks involving Russia's companies.
Okay, thank you. You've opened a couple doors for the second half of our show. So let me take this opportunity to remind that we're talking about Kazakhstan's upcoming referendum on building a nuclear power plant. And the debate this plan has sparked inside the country. And my guests are Aya Renault, an editor in RFARL's Kazakh service, Nomoklia as Azat Tik, and soon to be senior editor at RFARL's new Central Asia unit. Darkhan Umerbekov, a digital editor at Azat Tik, who's based in Astana and has been following events there surrounding the nuclear power plant, and Togshan Kasenova, an expert on nuclear politics and financial crime prevention, and author of the widely acclaimed book Atomic Step: How Kazakhstan Gave Up the Bomb. Togshan, let me start with you. Now that, you know, Darkhan, yeah, especially since I said that you study or deal with financial crime prevention. Corruption is obviously going to be a huge issue in this. You know, Darkhan mentioned that they have the light rail project in Astana, which has gone on forever and ever and already cost more than $1 billion. A nuclear power plant with two reactors is going to cost minimum $12 billion. So let's start with that. Is there any trust that there's government organizations that are going to be able to honestly oversee a minimum $12 billion expense?
Bruce, let's start from the fact that I think it's almost universal that all the initial estimates, both in terms of time, but also in terms of money necessary to construct nuclear power plants, they almost universally tend to be too optimistic. So we will probably be talking about even higher amounts of money. And as large-scale national projects, these kind of projects provide fertile grounds for corruption. And there are, you know, cases. And the one case that that immediately comes to mind is the case of Brazil, where the third nuclear reactor construction has been frozen for a very extended period of time, exactly because there was this corruption investigation. All the contractors had, you know, they were investigated. The main person went to prison. And so I think for Kazakhstan, it's a real risk. You know, we know that Kazakhstan is not rated highly in terms of its corruption overall ranking. And I think those who express concern about vulnerabilities created by potential corruption, they have a point. I just want to mention that from the nuclear security and safety point of view, It's of course bad to have a light rail, you know, fall victim to corruption. But I think when we are talking about a nuclear facility, the risks are on another scale, because if due to corruption, you don't meet certain standards, it just, I think the implications can be so much more serious. And so I definitely see it as a very serious risk and, a concern that is grounded in facts and reality.
Okay, thank you. I'd like to get your take on that too. I mean, what are the concerns about corruption in something like this? And who exactly is going to be watching to see that this money is spent how it's supposed to be spent?
Yes, well, actually, I think both Tokjana and Darkhan touched a very important point here, is that the discussion, the conversation about the construction of nuclear power plant, it's a lot about the trust in government's ability to build it, or lack of it, to be more precise. So corruption is an issue. And again, coming back to what Darkhan said about, and Tokjan said about how the debate is not nuanced about the construction, the plans to construct the plant, because devil is in detail and we don't have those details. So as I mentioned before, we started recording in our chat before that, for instance, we were working on something for Azatik, explaining how nuclear power plants are constructed, how long it costs, how much it costs, how long it takes. And the first source we wanted to use to find our answers is the company that is in charge of the project. And the website is empty. There is nothing. By chance, we had an interview with the head of the company, Alliance. So we had a chance to ask him why the website is empty and are you going to provide any information, because the company has been in existence for 10 years. It has been carrying out some extensive work, according to the director, for past several years. They were choosing a potential site for the nuclear power plant. They were meeting the potential providers of the nuclear reactors. They had Japanese running some tests regarding, the readiness of Balkhash Lake to, accommodate a car plant. So all sorts of things. And there's nothing about it on the website. So we asked him, and the answer was, well, it's not a secret, but we paid a lot of money for those studies. We cannot just dump everything on a website. But anyone who wants to have a look is welcome to pass by, and we will provide all those documents. However, many environmentalists previously claimed that actually they did request access. They never received it. So, the entire project already starts with a big lack of transparency, which again leads to the problem of further deterioration of trust in whatever government will come up with once the decision during the referendum is taken. And the way the question is phrased right now, are you supporting or do you support the construction of nuclear power plant? That's it. So everything else remains, outside this question. So who will be the provider, how the provider will be chosen, how the money will be contracted, under which conditions. And we don't have those answers. Every time we try to get them, the response is, look, there is no point of starting any serious work, any serious modeling, due diligence, because there is no definite yes from the people. Once we have that answer, we will start working. We will choose a provider according to, the highest standards and economic efficiency, and we will choose only the best. But these are just words that are not so far supported by any numbers. So we don't actually have any details to judge how much we can trust into, the feasibility of this project and its economic efficiency. And it's again coming back to your question about energy deficit and how Kazakhstan is trying to solve it. It's a multifaceted problem because the infrastructure is worn out, both thermal power plants and the power lines. There are huge losses. There are huge incidents, like the one that happened in Kibastuz in 2022, when in minus 30, the entire city was sitting without heat and freezing out. So I think the problem of energy system in Kazakhstan is real, and also the goal of meeting, you know, carbon neutrality by 2060 is real. However, the way it's done does not elicit much trust in the people. So I think, yeah, corruption being one of it, but another is just absence of this open dialogue about what is required, how we tackle that issue, and what will be the, you know, outcome, possible outcome.
Okay, thank you. You know, that's, Darhan had mentioned the contractor. There's four companies participating in the bids, one from China, one from Russia, one from South Korea, and one from France. Tokjan, what are you hearing about the likely winner of this?
I think most people think that the government of Kazakhstan will choose Russia's Rosatom. And I think it's important to point out, and I think, if I'm not mistaken, Darhan already mentioned also that there is a category of people who are not against nuclear power, but they against the current plans because they assume the government will choose Russia. And I think we should, you know, it's one thing that government-affiliated experts don't want to talk about it, but I think we, you know, it's on us to pay attention to the Russia factor. So Russia is trying to insert itself in Central Asia. We see it, you know, based on the other contracts signed with Uzbekistan and Kyrgyzstan. I think for Kazakhstan, especially noting that it has such a good standing in the global nuclear order, it's really problematic to, if it makes this choice, I think it's really problematic for Kazakhstan to go for this project in the current circumstances and to choose Russia, because even though Rosatom itself is not under sanctions at the moment, its subsidiaries are already under sanctions, and we see, you know, practical implications of that. For example, the construction, the opening of the nuclear power plant in Turkey has been delayed because Germany's Siemens couldn't export certain key parts to, you know, on the order from Rosatom due to sanctions and export controls. And so Rosatom had to go to China and so on. So for practical reasons, that's an issue. But for me, it's even more important, and we shouldn't shy away from talking about this as much as possible. Russia's military and Rosatom personnel are currently occupying a civilian nuclear facility of another sovereign state. I'm talking about Zaporozhye. Russia is creating nuclear security and safety risks by being there, you know, of course, by the invasion and everything, but specifically by including a nuclear facility into the area of military action. And I think it's so serious. Russia should not be given the privilege of being seen as though, you know, everything is fine and it's one of the leading nuclear reactor suppliers, simultaneously as, you know, we are observing the situation at Zaporozhye. And while it's not discussed that much within Kazakhstan, I think we should also note that there are documented cases of torture of Ukrainian nuclear workers at Zaporozhye. And so for all of those reasons, I just think it would be a serious mistake for Kazakhstan to go for it, you know, in the current circumstances. And as we discussed before the show started, you know, once you choose a partner for a nuclear power plant construction, You have decades ahead of you, while you're building the plant, operating it, dealing with nuclear fuel supplies and so on. So it's a decision with very long-term consequences.
Okay, thank you. Tuck John raised a number of interesting points, important points there too. I understand that Rosatom, of course, is probably, I think they have more contracts to build nuclear power plants right now than any other company in the world at this moment. I also know that I'm not going to go into their safety record or anything. I don't know too much about that, except to mention that I know that they were building one in Belarus. And about 10 years ago when they were bringing in, I think it was one of the containment units for the cooling the nuclear rods or something, that when they lifted it on the crane, it dropped 2 meters and hit the ground. And they were still going to use it until Belarus officials said, we don't want that one. So with that kind of history, tell me a little bit about how Kazakhs or citizens of Kazakhstan are viewing the possibility of Rosatom building their nuclear power plant.
Well, again, the thing is that all these issues surrounding, the construction of nuclear power plant, they're quite technical. You really need to dig. You need to understand. Some people really shy away from making this effort, and just trying to understand what it's all about. What is a nuclear power reactor? How it works? I'm not talking about like real details, and we, none of us is a nuclear physicist or specialist in the nuclear energy. However, the basics are quite easy to understand. And I find that it really, again, helps to reflect on certain things. So, and the basics are, like, for instance, yes, there is this attitude. So they clearly experienced, while constructing the power plant in Belarus, the sanctions started affecting Russia's access to certain technologies and equipment. So that's why I'm talking about the sanctions that were introduced actually after after Crimea. They had difficulty accessing certain equipment, so it delayed the construction of the plant. It really raised the costs because also the value of ruble dropped, and so I think, I don't remember the exact numbers, but the cost is like doubled or tripled due to those facts. These are all details, and people often say, well, it's complicated. And moreover, government is kind of reinforcing that, thinking mode by saying, again, I'm coming back to that interview with Timur Jantikin from Kazakh nuclear power plants, when every time he was asked, a more specific question about whatever, he says, well, do you really want me to go into details? It's complicated. It's complex. Basically, I don't believe you are at a level, to follow. So why would we discuss that? And so this thinking that, nuclear energy is complicated, there's no reason to understand. Russia has vast experience, resources, and et cetera. So clearly they did build stuff. So probably will be able to repeat that in future. So it's a powerful country. As Tokayev recently mentioned, we cannot defeat Russia. So let's just trust in its expertise. That's the vibe a bit I get as well from people in Kazakhstan and elsewhere. So for instance, there is an issue also of the power plant being built in Uzbekistan, which is another thing. It's next door to Kazakhstan, is being built as we speak. It's a small modular reactor, I think 5 small modular reactors. But again, these are reactors that were on icebreakers, Russian icebreakers. So it's a kind of converted technology. And there are no small modular reactors in existence in the world, if I'm not mistaken. So it's to me it sounds quite experimental. And as I said, it's next door, it's next to a vast agricultural region in the south. So, but again, people seem to be uninterested in learning more, in understanding how it all works and what it's all about. And as I mentioned, it is not that complicated. So I would really advise people to go out. There's plenty of information just to try to understand the basics about the nuclear power plants and the risks associated with them, the benefits as well. But you know, like more in detail, not the numbers, the random numbers we receive on, you know, from Kazakh government that don't have any foundation. So, for instance, we are told that it will create 10,000 jobs. It will save, actually, these numbers, I looked at them this morning, that it will create 10,000 jobs. It will save 100 billion tenge a year. For the state budget, it will save, it will bring $3 billion in taxes. And none of these numbers is supported by anything. And every time we ask, we are told, well, there are no models, there are no actual calculations. So again, question where those numbers come from. So yeah, that's the issue. People don't really know and they don't seem to want to understand how it works. But they are aware of energy deficit and that it needs to be solved. That people know and are concerned about.
Okay, thank you. We're getting close to the end of the show, so I'm going to ask you to make your last comments. I mean, I think we can agree that this is probably going to pass in the referendum, right? But I suppose the question I would ask, although feel free to comment on anything you think I've missed, is this the end of the issue or is this the start of the... This is just the end of this chapter, and we're going to start a long period of public criticism and resistance to this. Darhan, we'll start with you.
Actually, I just wanted to drop a comment on what Aya said. What she said reminds me, you know, George Orwell's a book, 1984, The Ignorance is Strength. That's what... the government is trying to deliver to Kazakh people. You've mentioned about the possible delay, and I would say that the delay is likely because of many, several factors. And of course, the corruption is number one risk. But besides, there is a interesting point given by the USA's ambassador to Kazakhstan, Daniel Rosenblum. In his trip to the USA, he attended a talk at Caspian Policy Center where he said that this holding a referendum is a kind of a strategy to delay the construction of the plan, because generally it's believed that it's Russia's lobby or it's Russia's pressure on Kazakh authorities to build a nuclear power plant. And if we agree that this holding a referendum is a way to, you know, delay the construction, because there are people who are asking that, to like why the government is asking people, it never asks on such important decisions. And if that is the case, besides corruption, Kazakhstan and the Kazakh authorities might be interested in delaying the project in a hope for political transition in Moscow, possibly to you know, to democracy, and then they will be able to shut this project down. And the third question, aspect of this issue is that in case Rosatom wins the project, it will be it might be delayed also because of the sanctions. Right now, Rosatom is not sanctioned by the Western governments. But to the best of my knowledge, the USA is making some progress in sanctioning Rosatom 2. If it's sanctioned, it will definitely face difficulties in constructing the plants because they are no. They also, you know, they are also dependent on some technologies from developed countries, and they will not be able to bring those technology to finish the project.
Okay, great, thank you, Aya.
Yeah, actually, another example we are witnessing right now that shows that there will be delays. Either way, is the Akuyu plant in Turkey, which also is behind all deadlines again due to the effect of Western sanctions on Russia. Actually, this entire situation, I read at the beginning of the show, you asked about comments that some people may be passing in Kazakhstan regarding the planned nuclear power plant. I read a joke somewhere recently that was, so basically the person was saying that this entire debate about nuclear power plant reminds me a situation in which a family has been driving a run-down Zaporozhets for 30 years and is now discussing what to buy, a Mercedes or a Tesla, and where to get money for it. But I think actually the comparison will be even more vivid if you say that if the family is trying to buy a plane that nobody in the family can fly, but it apparently moves fast, sounds fancy and looks modern. So I expect, yeah, absolutely, there'll be delays caused by all sorts of things. And though the government is saying that we have, we have experts who will be able to operate that plant or even to build it, that we have all sorts of capacities, I doubt that's the case. The same with, even fuel for the plant. They very often quote the fact that Kazakhstan is the biggest producer of uranium. But the thing is, in the past 30 years, Kazakhstan has not acquired technologies to enrich uranium. So Russia is the leader in the supply of enriched uranium and nuclear fuel, not because of its vast uranium reserves, but because it has the technology to enrich it and has the full nuclear fuel cycle. So I don't believe that Kazakhstan has the necessary expertise. Plus, there are so many things should be in place, all sorts of regulations and rules and permits and all that, even if propelled, through all these various government agencies just to make it happen, still takes time. And International Atomic Energy Agency still will be involved. So definitely there'll be delays, I'm certain of it. The cost will not be as they're quoted right now, like around $12 billion. I don't believe so. The one in Egypt, which is building, again, also with Russia's help, is building the first nuclear power plant. It's, I think, two reactors also, maybe four. It's $25 billion. And again, for sure, it will be more expensive. And so, yeah, there'll be delays. There will be many things to come. And I don't foresee that any of them will be positive should the decision be positive. And then Russia, during the referendum, and then Russia, Rosatom is chosen as a provider of the nuclear power plant.
Okay, thank you. Tokjan, you get the last word.
Thank you. I first wanted to build up or maybe add my opinion to what I was saying. I actually have a more positive view of Kazakhstan's current technological and expertise, capacity. I don't think that Kazakhstan has enough personnel at the moment. You know, they say we have three nuclear research reactors and that's why we have enough expertise. I don't think, it's true for right now because the nuclear power plant will need, so many more people. But in general, Kazakhstan does have a very advanced nuclear sector. And while it doesn't have you know, its own enrichment capability. The fact that over the years we saw how Kazatomprom went from a bankrupt, you know, sector to one of the leaders on the international market, and the fact that, you know, they are able now to produce nuclear fuel elements for different type of reactors. So I think, you know, there are people and there is technology and there is capacity which can provide a good foundation. So in that respect, I think the foundation is solid. Maybe, you know, it's not matching the immediate demand, you know, if nuclear power plant would start working tomorrow. But I just want to express, you know, my view that I think the foundation is pretty strong. And because it would take so long to build a power plant, I think, you know, if government makes all the preparations properly, then they will be able to train enough personnel for that. But I agree with both speakers. I think it's very likely that there will be significant delays. And when I look at the, just even at the history of Vulcan, this chosen site, I feel for them. I feel for the residents of Vulcan because they were, you know, the village was built as a potential site for a state district power plant that didn't go anywhere. Then there was a project with South Korea to build a new thermal power plant, which was canceled. And so with this type of projects, I think, you know, it's very likely that we're talking about a project that will not come to fruition within 10 years. And in this case, I think it's for the better. I think the more time there is to plan properly, to make all the right decisions, to prepare, to train personnel, to make sure, as I said, all the, you know, relevant legislation is in place. So in that case, delays, I think, are a good thing. So that's how we can end on a positive note, I guess.
Okay, great. Thank you. Thank you, Darhan. Thank you, Tokjan and Aya. And a big thanks, as always, to Nathan Shoemaker, our Mejlis podcast producer in Washington, D.C. And a reminder, you can subscribe to the Mejlis podcast or the Central Asia in Focus newsletter by visiting Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's website at rfarl.org. Thank you very much, and we'll be back soon. Bye-bye.